Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom the Digital Architect Liebel. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
Hey guys, we're back. And this week with me, I have Jennifer LeBlanc, and she is a best-selling author of Launching for Revenue. Hey, Jennifer.
Hey, Tom. Good morning.
Good morning. I know I was supposed to introduce the book, but I'm actually more interested in launches and repositioning projects. What is that?
So launching and repositioning projects. So basically that is when a company is launching a new product or a new service, or sometimes the company themselves. So that's the launch process. Mm-hmm. And then for established companies, they sometimes need to reposition. They're moving into a new market and they themselves have a new product or service. The company's not new, but they have a new product or service that they need to reposition because maybe it didn't go so well during the launch process. So those are the times when repositioning comes in handy, or there's been a scandal. There's always that.
Interesting. A scandal. So do you work with more with big companies or small companies?
Both. So we tend to work with, we call them our change agents. They are either small companies, startups, you know, I'm here in Silicon Valley, so that are creating something new that's never existed before. Or when we work with a large company, we tend to work with the new technology group or the new devices group, is it, you know, where the new stuff is. And so they're essentially a startup inside of the larger company. They're not doing kind of the main work of the business. They're doing the next generation work. That tends to be where we work. So even though the size of the company varies, the persona of the person is very much about they're trying to create something new.
So what sort of help do you give when it comes to launching? Are you the one helping with the funding, or are you helping with the strategy? What do you guys do?
So essentially, we are a marketing strategy, go-to-market strategy, and implementation agency full service. So we help them figure out what is the best go-to-market strategy for their product or service. And then how do we then help them get that to market successfully to drive the revenue and results they're looking for?
Could you describe the process? I'm curious about the go-to market strategy, how that would work for a small business. And I'm assuming this is for ones with funding, right? Or are you also helping like bootstrapping ones?
So that's where the book comes in. It's difficult to help a bootstrapping company because, they need to take actual money to the bank.
Yeah.
And so the book basically is an opportunity for me to be able to work with more companies. I just talked with a startup, a couple weeks ago that they don't have funding yet, but they really need the advice. So they have the book. So she's working her way through the book as she prepares for her launch and prepares for getting funding. So the process for go-to-market is essentially what is contained in the book. So I am a scientist by training. And then I moved into marketing when I moved here to the U.S. 25 years ago. And so I have always approached marketing, and I love it now because there's so much data, right? I've always approached marketing as how can we put more structure and make it more, less qualitative and more quantitative. And for the last 20 years, basically the question I've been obsessed with is why is it that some companies fail at launch and some companies don't? I mean, the failure rate for companies is very high. It's 35 to 80% of launches fail. 92% of tech startups fail. But obviously, we have new products, we have new services, we have new companies. Some make it. Why is that? What's the difference? And so that is essentially what I've been doing for the last 20 years is trying to answer that question and doing our own proprietary research and reading research about companies that the launch process and when it was successful and when it wasn't and what's the difference. And over time, I began to realize that there were factors that could be identified. And if you can identify an element, then you can manage it and measure it. So that became what we now call the launch readiness assessment, I think results, is the basis for the book. There are 10 elements of launch that you need to have to be successful. And the book goes through step by step, like here's element one, here's examples of how to do that right, how to do it wrong. here's how you can assess yourself as to where you are in that process. So that was a long answer, but that's essentially what I've been doing the last 20 years is trying to figure out how to make that launch process successful for our clients.
So what's the answer?
So the answer is in the book. And there are 10 elements of launch, starting with the product. And there's questions in there about whether your product is ready for launch, which can be applied to a service as well. You know, your logo, your website, your positioning is super critical. Do you have that nailed? Because if your positioning isn't nailed, nothing else is going to work. What's your sales strategy? What's your content strategy? All of those pieces have to be in place. What's your funding in order to make your launch successful? You don't need to have a 10 out of 10 on each one of these elements, but you can go through the process and decide, okay, gosh, we have like 7 of our elements are 6 or more, but these 2 elements are 2 out of 10. Well, we probably need to shore those up a little bit. You don't need a perfect score, but you need to have, you need to be doing fairly well in most of those 10 elements to be successful.
Which elements do you think are most important?
Positioning, absolutely. Well, product and positioning. If your product doesn't work, I have been on many, especially in my corporate days, many launch experiences where, we got thrown a product over the fence and said, here, go market this. Well, who's it for? Well, we don't know. Have you tested any users? No. so that's a little challenging. And generally now I don't take those kind of projects since I'm not in corporate. I don't have to take those kind of projects anymore. We call those lipstick on a pig projects. But so that if the product, assuming the product is working, you know what your target audience is, you've built that product for your target audience. Now, those are a lot of assumptions, especially here in Silicon Valley. Assuming those things are in place, then I'd say the next most important thing is your positioning. Who is it that is going to use your product most likely? And have you worked with them directly to see how they respond to this product? Does it actually meet a problem that they have? Or is it a product in search of a solution?
So what's this?
So getting those things straight is important. Sorry.
So what's the scientific way of helping someone with the positioning?
So we have a process called a brand DNA. There's a lot of scientific references in our work. Mm-hmm. That we use to go through to extract the information that we're going to need to build great positioning for our clients. So we look at the company, the history, the vision, the alignment of the executive team around those things. That's often a big discovery during the brand DNA process. And then the competition. Where does the competition sit? What do they do better than you do? Because you don't want to get into a situation with a competition where you're in a Me Too situation. If they're doing something that's, they just really have that piece nailed, you want to leave that to your competition. You want to create a new space that you can play in, that you're not just kind of one-upping who's already out there. And then also your customers, your clients, depending on your business, really getting in depth into who's the decision maker, who's the influencer, what do they think, what do they eat for breakfast? Like, we want you to intimately know your customers. And if you don't, by the time you're finished with us, you will. So that is, those three things help us to really make sure that we're not missing anything to the company, the customers, and the competition about how can we create a place that is your own. In a good positioning exercises, we can do a situation where we can defend a space on the field that is yours. When we get really lucky, we can create a whole new playing field for you.
Let's talk about the new playing field, because one of the things I always hear is, just create something that's 5% better than your competition and you can win with that. Or one of the marketing genius ideas was with one of the car rental companies, I think, or maybe shipping companies, they just said, we try harder.
Avis.
Yeah, so yes. So tell me more about why you believe in this new market. Why not compete?
I think Avis was actually a brilliant marketing campaign. And there's a similar one that I usually use when I give this example for clients when we're doing a brand DNA. And so we all have, thanks to Jack Rice and Al Trout did this, but a positioning ladder in our brain for every product and service that we purchase. So, you know, this is America, so soda is big. So name me the number one soda.
Coke.
Number two.
Pepsi.
Number three.
Dr. Pepper. That's just because I like it.
Okay. Generally, what happens is, depending what the product is, it actually doesn't matter what the product is, people can name number one right away, number two fairly quickly, and number three, they kind of go,
Yeah, that's what I did. I was shooting between Sprite,
right?
And Dr. Pepper. But you know,
right. So there's usually a little bit of hesitation for number, a little for two, and then most people sometimes can't even come up with number three. And that's very common. Same thing if you say car companies or, you know, computers, whatever the product is or the service, you're going to have that same sort of experience.
Right.
And so 7-Up in the 70s did this amazing campaign where, you know, they are competing in a cola market, right? That's typically what it's called, right? It's Coca-Cola, and cola has kind of become a generic term. And so then they call themselves the Un-Cola.
Yeah, I remember that.
Which was brilliant because there is no way that Pepsi or Coke can get onto that playing field because they can't be the Un-Cola. They are the colas. But the brilliance in that was that we carry that ladder around so that we can keep track of things. So 7-Up then existed on an already existing ladder in our brain called Cola Brain, the Cola ladder, where there's Coke, Pepsi, 7-Up, Sprite, Dr. Pepper, or whatever it might be. Sierra Mist is big these days here. Mm-hmm. So they attached themselves to that existing category, but completely distinguished themselves within that category. Brilliant, absolutely brilliant positioning exercise.
I do like that.
So that's the kind of thing that we're looking for as, you know, can we do that with our clients? I have a colleague who's a big believer in creating new categories. I see his point. It's incredibly expensive to create a new category. And it's much easier to go into an existing category and then differentiate yourself within that category.
Can you give another example or two of that with maybe smaller companies? Because I think everyone right now listening is like, how can I do that?
Yes. This is the holy grail of positioning. It is difficult to do. I mean, We Try Harder was sort of an example of that. Mm-hmm. Not quite as clear cut as the 7-Up one, but it was a great example of that, right? Because it effectively depositioned their competition, right? Because it's basically implying to the competition doesn't try. Very subtle, but, you know, in kind of a very cheery, you know, underdog kind of way, but very effectively depositioned their competition.
Yeah, what about niches when, you know, someone is coming in right now and a lot of people are coming in at the same time, so there's no number one yet. So you have a lot of competition, but I don't think anyone in some niches has, like, this is my go-to thing, right? And there's a lot of these. How do you tackle that?
You mean when there's like a crowded playing field?
Maybe, or it's something you like. Like, for example, what we do with one of the companies is online course marketing, right? And online course marketer that everyone's going to name. Like, if you ask
them, there's no number one right,
no number
in
one.
That category.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, because that is an emerging category.
Right.
So that's where you have the biggest opportunity, really. And how do you deliver value? I mean, that's generally where I'm focused on is looking at the people who are developing online courses. What is their biggest pain point and how are you answering that?
Well, because sales, right?
That's, so. Right. That's the value that you're delivering and making sure that your positioning is very clearly showing that, how you are delivering that particular value better than anyone else on the market. And it's tough when it's, you know, when it's an emerging category because you're having to do, this is why I'm not a huge believer in creating new categories.
Right.
And hats off to my colleague who does this all the time. But you have to then, not only are you promoting your company, you have to do a lot of education about the market.
Right.
And that's expensive. So, if we have the budget to create categories, I'm all for that. It's a great place to be. But it can be extremely challenging to do that.
It is. I'll give you one more example. And I bet at least 500 people listening right now have this type of company, SEO.
Mm-hmm.
And they all do the same thing. We're going to get you to number one or two in Google. We're going to, you know, it's all the same thing. Everyone is saying the same exact thing. Now their new ones are like, we guarantee results, no contracts, but there's no real differentiators. You know, when I look at them, it's the same thing. Like it's almost impossible to do anything different because you're still doing the same thing with Google, you know? So I wonder what you think about that.
So you know, that is common in a lot of categories. So I'm going to take department stores, for example.
Yeah.
You know, department stores are department stores. The difference between the department stores, say, Sears and, say, Nordstrom is not what they do, but how they do it. First of all, there's a different target market there that they're going after. But Nordstrom is very unique in the way it delivers the service of the experience of the department store. And so for things like SEO companies, marketing companies, you know, I talk to my prospects about this. What's different about us is how we do what we do, not what we do. There are lots of people that can do marketing strategy and marketing implementation and do SEO and build online courses and all of those things. How you do that is what differentiates you. So it doesn't have to be that you're creating, you know, this disruptive, you know, favorite word around here in Silicon Valley, this disruptive new category, but how you deliver things, like how Nordstrom delivers things. They have this new store they're opening up in New York that will be open 24/7, because of course retail, you know, is dying, quote unquote, right? They're opening this new store, I believe it's in downtown Manhattan, and it's open 24/7. You can order at 2 o'clock in the morning. I need a tie for the morning. You can order at 2 o'clock in the morning. You can come into the store, pick up that tie, get your suit fitted, and walk out.
Mm.
It's an amazing concept. And it's an extension of sort of the Nordstrom experience of high touch service.
Yeah.
In the digital age, right? They're not doing anything different. They're selling suits and ties and shoes and stuff. But how they do it is very unique.
Yeah, the convenience.
Right. And they're building, you know, now with this new store they're building for a changing demographic that doesn't want to go to the mall. But you still need a tie for your meeting tomorrow morning. And you want to make sure it's going to go with your suit, right? So you can order 3 or 4, and there's someone who will arrive there when you walk in with your 3 or 4, help you get that, you know, tie set up, make sure that it does work well with your suit and your shirt you're planning on wearing, and you walk out the door. Brand new concept.
Now I see why the second part of what you offer on the website is repositioning. It seems like that really is one of the main things to fix before doing anything else.
Yes. I mean, there's a lot of situations where people may have gone out with a product or service, you know, like Nordstrom, and then they need to reposition, right? The market has changed. People's, you know, tastes have changed. Other things have happened in the competition that cause a rethinking of your original strategy. Absolutely.
With the companies that you work with, other than positioning or repositioning, what are some other major challenges that you run into when it comes to launching?
I think here, I mean, I'm from Silicon Valley, so all of my sort of answers are in that context. So here we have an unnatural expectation of time.
Can you explain?
So, you know, we have launched companies in as little as 2 weeks, and that was a special case. But, you know, generally it takes 3 to 6 months, and it takes 6 to 9 months to change people's perceptions of you. And I have tried, believe me, I have tried to bend that time curve over the last 20 years I've been doing this. I have rarely seen it change. You know, even if we get the launch done in 3 months, I find that we don't change perceptions of that company. We don't start to see evidence of how that's changed for 6 to 9 months. It's just kind of very consistent. And that frustrates me because I want things to happen faster as well. It frustrates my clients because they want everything to happen yesterday.
Right.
But there is just human beings, no matter how fast the pace of information that comes at us is, we seem to have a certain pace about making change. And when you're repositioning a company or launching a company, you are asking someone else to make a change. You're asking them to buy your product. They have never bought it before. You're asking them to buy a new service, to buy a new product that they've never seen before. That's a change. They have to change their business process to integrate that. They have to change their daily habits to integrate your new product or service into their lives. It just doesn't happen in a week. I'd love it if it did, but... I've tried.
Yeah, it sort of makes sense. I have a a good number of friends from Silicon Valley and from the startup world and from crypto. And I want to get your thoughts on that in a minute. But yeah, they all change careers every 3 to 6 months. So I can imagine if one of them starts a project, it's like, okay, can we get this done in a week? And I want to exit in 3 months.
That is very common here, yeah. So that's something that we struggle with a lot is, you know, educating clients about the reality of space and time when it comes to human beings' minds and hearts.
So what are your thoughts on crypto? I have a lot of friends that switched completely well-run businesses into, you know, the crypto space last year. From branding managers, they became crypto branding, you know, just all types of nonsense. So since you're in that bubble a little bit, I'm curious, what do you think?
You mean cryptocurrency?
All of the cryptocurrency and blockchain, just, you know, that whole space.
I have
space.
Very different opinions about cryptocurrency versus blockchain. So cryptocurrency is something, you know, I'm not an expert on, so maybe there's something there. But I think there's some value in cryptocurrency, especially for situations where the currency is very unstable. And I think it could be an awesome way. I'm a dual citizen, so I can see the value in, you know, being able to move money across borders without having to answer to some bank about it. But I don't know if it's mature enough at this point. You know, I think it has potential. I'm not experienced enough or knowledgeable enough to really speak on cryptocurrency. It's not something that I'm terribly familiar with or comfortable with. Blockchain, I think, is a revolutionary, amazing technology. Let's bring it on. You know, that's a different story than the cryptocurrency. So, for example, your digital health records, like, we have got to get those on blockchain. You know, blockchain is designed for anything where you never want to delete the information. Why would you ever want to delete your shot records? I'm constantly trying to find those for myself and my daughter.
Right.
Your shot records, your mammogram records, you know, all of your tests, all of those things exist. Multiple people can put them in and they're secure and they belong to you. This is a perfect application of blockchain. And we need to get it in yesterday in Silicon Valley speak, in my opinion.
Are you working with any companies in the blockchain space?
I am not, but I am super interested, especially in medical records. In how we use blockchain for that. I think there's other examples, but to me, that is a, you know, absolutely perfect fit.
What is a tip that you would give to a company that is listening now, so maybe an owner or some manager that is not doing well with their launch, and something that they can maybe do quickly themselves? Would it just be to buy the book and follow the steps, or do you have any other advice?
They can buy the book. There's also an online quiz on thinkresultsmarketing.com. Just click on the Are You Ready to Launch? And there's like a 5-minute version so they can kind of get a flavor of maybe where they may have some gaps. You know, I think if you're struggling with it, go back to your product and your positioning, because that's probably where your problem is.
Awesome. Jennifer, thank you for coming on. And where can people find you?
You can find me at thinkresultsmarketing.com, and you can also find all my work. I have another book coming up in the fall at Jennifer S. as in Susan LeBlanc.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Great. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the digital architect, Liebel. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.